And I'm sure knowing yourself that deeply has really changed your financial life and just the way that you've grown success-wise in your businesses as well.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Are you spending too much money on ads? Want to increase your average order value? Are you eyeing that big exit from your business? Or have you been wondering how you can increase your lifetime value, build a community, and basically make more money through customer loyalty and retention? Let us help. Huckleberry Consulting brings over a decade of experience in client and customer success from the world's biggest companies. Let your customers tell you what they want. Visit consulthuckleberry.com to claim your free audit and quit leaving money on the table. Once again, that's consulthuckleberry.com. See you there.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. Today is going to be an awesome conversation about money, investing, and I know that a lot of you guys are entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs thinking about getting into entrepreneurship, mostly for money. I mean, let's admit it, if you work a 9-to-5, very likely there's a limit and there's a ceiling to what you will be making, unless, you know, you make some commissions and that's how your employment arrangement has been set up, but, or you can have a side hustle. But if you have a business, there's literally no limit to what you could be making, especially if your total addressable market is pretty high. So, you know, one thing that I love about being an entrepreneur is I always say how much I make is up to me. So I have a very amazing guest today. She's an investment and financial wellness coach dedicated to teaching clients how to grow and protect their wealth. Melissa transformed her own financial situation, going from crippling credit card debt to millionaire status in less than a year by using non-traditional financial strategies. Clue, she did not go to a casino or win the lottery. And she now shares her strategies, typically accessible only to the wealthiest 1%, with her clients. Through her one-on-one coaching and soon-to-launch programs, she creates personalized wealth blueprints, leverages her extensive network, including ex-IRS agents, tax attorneys, advisors, financial educators, and venture capitalists, and she empowers clients to achieve the financial freedom they desire. Now, I know all of that sounds awesome, but her work is not limited to that. In fact, she has been featured in several outlets such as Livestrong.com, MindBodyGreen, TheDailyMeal.com, The Lip TV, and even on Roku. So, ladies and gentlemen, my special guest today is Melissa Lindsay Friedman. Hi, Melissa. How are you today?
Hello, hello. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me, Carla.
I'm super excited. So, just a little trivia for you guys. Melissa and I actually met at a sauna. So when two naked ladies plan a business or a podcast together, you know it's going to be amazing. So I am super curious about your story. And so you shared with me that you went from crippling debt to millionaire status in a year with some strategies. So I would love to know as much as you can share what that story was like and how did you get to that much debt and what did you do to get yourself out of it?
That's a great question. So, I do share a lot of this on my Instagram, but to give you the brief history of my financial history, because it's pretty deep. Let me share that I basically was living in Los Angeles, making an average salary, starting salary at the time, about 10 years ago, of $28,000 a year before taxes. That at the time was not enough to support one individual in central LA. And so I was in a position where I was basically trying to recover and handle like my day-to-day expenses. And then before I knew it, financially, I had ended up having to support a lot of immediate family members. And so the responsibilities of like cost of living and food and shelter and basic necessities all fell on my shoulders. And before I knew it, I was in crippling credit card debt. My back was against the wall, and I just felt like there's nowhere but up from here. So I knew I had to take responsibility for the fact that I wasn't making enough money to support myself, let alone all the individuals that I ended up financially supporting. And if my life was going to change, I had to take responsibility and change my life myself. And so I started realizing that the money that I was making wasn't going to work for me. So what I did was I looked at my skill set and I said, what kinds of skills do I have that I can leverage at present? And where can I go where these skills are getting top dollar? And so I knew that I could move to another geography. I moved from Los Angeles to San Francisco. Took a job in tech, learned all about crypto and all about blockchain and technology, and threw myself in full force. And before I knew it, became a millionaire. And yeah, I know there's a lot of amazing stories of like crypto millionaires making so much money and doing their thing. I was really fortunate. I got crypto that I acquired, and there were times, Carla, when I had to ask myself, am I going to feed myself or am I going to take money and put it into an investment that's going to grow over time and maybe give me a return. And so when your back is against the wall, I'm sure as your audience knows, and they're an entrepreneurial audience, so of course they have these moments where they have to make choices, like choice A or choice B. What I had to do was just say, okay, do I want to like eat? Do I want to buy this little item or do I want to invest in myself and think about my future? And I was really fortunate. I got company equity in a great company that I think had incredible promise. I started learning about investing and 401ks, stocks, putting my money in different kinds of assets. I acquired crypto. And before I knew it, in a very short period of time, because I had put myself in the right places with the right people and I was asking the right questions, I had become a millionaire.
That's awesome. That's a really, really good story. And because it's very hard to kind of just like sink in, like, oh my God, from debt to like millionaire, like how? Like without like going to the casino or whatever. But I do want to preface for everyone listening that obviously this is not financial advice. And please remember that crypto is still a very volatile channel or vehicle. Okay. I don't want you guys to think, oh my God, I have debt right now. Let me do crypto. Okay. So I don't want you guys to immediately just glean that conclusion. I really appreciate that Melissa emphasized that being in the right place, the right timing, asking the right questions, these things are the needle movers. Even if you started a business, you know, there's so many e-commerce millionaires, software millionaires too, even domain flippers. So it's not just crypto that can bring this much growth or this much money. And so wow, thank you for sharing your story. That's really, really inspiring. I know a couple of people who also became millionaires through crypto, but it once again, it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop there. You have to know how to manage your money. You have to know how to grow it. You have to not be irresponsible with it. And so, one of the things that you shared with me is that one of the most important things that someone should know is they should know themselves as a financial individual. So, can you tell me what that term means and what that means for me or for an entrepreneur?
That's a great question. And I love that you were saying, Carla, that there's so many ways to make money. And crypto is, yes, a risky investment. I do want to just like emphasize that before I answer your question, that I'm in total agreement with you. Crypto is a risky investment. It's not regulated yet. It is, however, on balance sheets for different governments and different pension funds, different institutions. So I do believe regulation is coming in time. But like I said, put yourself in the right rooms with the right people. In my opinion, network equals net worth. And so when you are in the right place, getting the right information, connecting with people in a community that you feel you can trust, that are supporting you along your financial growth journey, then you are on the path to success one way or another, whether it's crypto or real estate. There are, like you said, Carla, like so many ways to make money. I'm in the belief that like there's always going to be another way. If you think there's a missed opportunity, the next one will come around. but I want to answer your question. So thank you so much. It was a very thoughtful question, and I love talking about this. When it comes to your financial personality, I think quite transparently, a lot of entrepreneurs and individuals default to what their social circle does when it comes to finances. So if you're starting out as a new entrepreneur and you see somebody that has taken specific steps and invested in certain things for their business, you may assume that that exact same blueprint will work for you and your business. But it doesn't always happen that way. And so we have to honor that we as individuals have to see ourselves as financial individuals. So sometimes when you're making decisions, sit down and think like, what is the end goal that I really want? Where am I going? What do I value? And so some questions that you can continue to ask on top of that are, what is my risk preference? What is my risk tolerance? A lot of people don't really know if they're willing to really take huge, large risks in investing in themselves and in their business in particular. And I think when it comes down to being an entrepreneur, obviously you're taking a big risk being an entrepreneur, but maybe when it comes down to your finances, you don't want to risk 50 or 80% of your startup costs on certain investments and certain startups. So you need to think, what kinds of financial risks am I willing to take? Where and how am I going to take them in order to get to the end results? So once again, ask yourself, what do I value? What's important to me? Where am I going? What's my end result? What kind of risk preferences do I have when it comes to investing? A risky person will sometimes go all in, they'll take a lot of chances, but then being very risky can have disadvantages, like we talked about with crypto. So you need to know how to manage and balance your own risk. And what your tolerance is. And sometimes with entrepreneurs, that comes down to a lot of trial and error, unfortunately. And I would rather see people sit down and think, like, who am I as a person? And who am I as an individual? How do I apply that to my business? And how do I apply that to my finances? So those are some really great startup ways to like just think about who you are as a financial individual.
Yeah, I love that because one of the things that really helped me become, I would say, okay or content with my portfolio is when I fully accepted who I was. So I used to be a professional poker player, but I used to be just, I only played tournament. So I never really gambled. I just wanted a title. And I started playing poker very young. In fact, when I, as soon as I turned 20, I played in underground games, and as soon as I turned 21, that's when I started playing bigger tournaments because now I can, like, legally. But I hated having to, like, gamble. And that was actually the first time I realized who I am as a financial individual. I am actually very risk averse. I like slow, like, more solid investments, and this is why 70% of my investment portfolio is in real estate, and I started when I was 22. And now it has paid off for sure, like 13 years later, but it definitely took time. And I'm also lucky that my mom was a real estate broker and she gave me a lot of advice. And so I think that if I didn't have that realization, I would definitely have made a lot of very expensive mistakes along the way. And I have. I invested in things that I shouldn't have. I invested in people that I shouldn't have. But I think I would have lost more money. Because when I invested in these things that weren't sure, that weren't as stable as, you know, a blue chip stock or real estate or bonds, I was completely like, I know this is a gamble. I know I could lose this money. I was completely present and I wasn't betting my whole paycheck or my whole income or budget for the next year in that. So I love the questions that you raise. So guys, if you're listening, maybe pause for a little bit, go get your journal out and answer those questions. Like, what is my risk preference? What is my risk tolerance? What are my goals? What do I value? What's important to me? What is the end result that I want? And if you have a spouse, sit with your spouse in answering these questions, because if you start everything with good intention and with clear clarity on what you want, I think you're there, like you're already halfway and now you can make better decisions. So
I love that you asked. Yeah. I love that you had the network, first of all, like you had your mom.
Yeah.
Was very knowledgeable lucky about real estate.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is, like, we as women in particular, we default a lot of the time to what our family or our social circle does when it comes to finances. And
true.
So I personally am just going to speak for myself. I often feel like I've had to step outside of my family unit, outside of my social circle, and really take a good look at myself and say, who am I? Because Carla, when you told me that you were like, gambling, I would have automatically thought that you were a risky individual when it came to finances, but no, you're not. You're risk averse. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, super duper. And even when I play tournament, I realize that I never land at the final table as a top player. And I realize because I mostly just want to stay in the game. So my strategy is just playing slow, just stay in the game and take the tournament one table at a time. So what actually gives me relief is when I see players dropping out, that they, you know, dropping out of the tournament, and then I get to stay. So I realize that I am not motivated by being the main winner. I am motivated by staying in the game and gradually getting to the final table. And when I'm at the final table, I really only play when there's like the three of us. I've won some tournaments where I'm like the main winner. But I really, my dragon comes out, my riskiness only comes out when there's just like the three of us, because now the odds are very different. So
that's so interesting. And I'm sure knowing yourself that deeply has really changed your financial life and just the way that you've grown success-wise in your businesses as well.
Yeah, I mean, most of my businesses are not that boring or sexy, really. I have like 2 brick and mortar businesses, not sexy, and 1 outsourcing business. So it's like, yeah, it's nothing special here. No crazy bots, no crazy technology, just good work all the time. So how do personality differences affect who we are as a financial individual? Like what matters the most? Is it like maybe your extroversion, introversion? Is it your attachment style? Is it your childhood experience? What do you think are kind of like the main needle movers?
That's a good question. When I'm working with clients, I do give them basically like a money personality test, and I try to understand who they are. And actually, introversion and extroversion does play a big part in it. And that's fascinating, because if you are extroverted, you're maybe going to be asking people for advice and going to community and looking for support outside yourself. And if you're the opposite and you're introverted, you may be just trying to research things on the internet, look for free videos or courses and things that you can do for yourself, and not necessarily share transparently as much as you would if you're extroverted. if you are the kind of person that's going to share and be transparent about your financial situation, I'll tell you one thing, you're definitely going to learn a lot more. You're going to grow a lot more. You're going to end up in rooms with people where you're going to have opportunities more and more, because people may just swoop in and say, hey, like, you can learn this, you can experience this, and they'll take you along. So being really understanding of like your self-concept and who you are contributes so much to how your wealth grows and your finances shift throughout your life. Especially now that we're in a landscape where I really feel globally that diversification is the name of the game for the future of financial sustainability, if that's what you want to call it, for us individuals. That to me means like putting yourself in these rooms, being vulnerable, trying to get out of your comfort zones a little bit and learning new skills. And so when you're aware of your financial personality, but you can kind of try new things, do things that are a little bit challenging, but help educate you and support you along your growth journey, it will help you exponentially. And you will see how communities show up and people show up, and there's reinforcement even in your finances, how they shift and change as you show up in different ways that aren't necessarily how your personality is. Now, if you're thinking like the complete opposite, you're an extroverted person, maybe you should be a little bit more introverted. Maybe you shouldn't be sharing what your personal finances are all the time. Maybe be discreet about how much money you make or how successful you are. And I do talk about this a little bit with my one-on-one clients and in the online course. Basically, what I like to say is only share what you want to share. You know, don't divulge and share so much information. We're kind of in the social media world right now where a lot of people are flaunting luxury items on social media. And there's this belief that that's what luxury and success is. And to me, it's like, there's a difference between being rich and being wealthy. Being rich is like being able to purchase something every once in a while. Being wealthy is being able to sustain purchasing it over and over and over again. And so, you know, just being a little bit more discreet if you're an extroverted person that flaunts a lot, because there are people right now, unfortunately, in this world that do target and try and manipulate like people financially. So just be mindful of who you are as a person. Introversion, extroversion definitely contributes to your financial personality.
Wow, I love how you broke that down, because I am an extroverted person and I definitely realized that I've made a lot of decisions from talking to other people compared to reading. And that's why I have my own electric fence. You know, I know how I can be when I get excited about something, or like, oh my God, I met this person and he did this. And like, what if I do that? So I know myself that I could be like that. And that's why, once again, that's why I invest in real estate. I basically enslaved myself to pay like 10 mortgages at a time so that I can have like a forced savings and a forced like investment that I cannot, you know, veer away from, because I could easily probably invest in something that will, because I heard someone say something about it. So it seems like there's a lot of benefit to just the introspection, right? Just like, just not immediately doing the thing, just like, why am I doing this? Like, what are my goals? And how much do I know about myself? I love that.
And you're taking a lot of the right steps, because when you go and challenge yourself, like you have, putting yourself in this position with mortgages and businesses, like that's what really moves the needle. That's what is the difference between somebody who just like is successful, makes money, has a comfortable lifestyle, and somebody who really builds wealth and who builds like financial freedom and legacy. Somebody who's like you and being open to challenging yourself a little bit to grow, putting yourselves maybe in the rooms or masterminds with the people that are going to challenge you to grow a little bit more financially and to take on some new experiences that are maybe outside of your comfort zone a little bit.
I love that. I love that learning. I think that's also one of the things that makes really good investors, right? Like, obviously you don't just like stay in the safe. You have to also keep learning, keep reading. I mean, look at Warren Buffett, right? All he does is read, really. Like, he says it. I'm sure he doesn't just read. I mean, he eats McDonald's and whatever. but it does it like you said, when you challenge yourself and you keep growing, that growth is going to show up in different parts of your life. And one of the places that it will show up is in your money. So that's a great benefit.
And I love telling people, like, when they're, you know, when they're really learning a new financial skill, let's say like you invest in something new, whether it's your business or stocks, real estate, crypto, private equity, whatever kind of like income generating investments you want to invest in, I say like, go all in, start with that, learn as much as you can. And then when you feel like you're at a skill set, you're feeling very comfortable with it, challenge yourself by learning how to diversify a little bit in different asset classes.
Yeah.
And so that could be somebody like you who's diversifying in different businesses, or it could be diversifying in different geographies with real estate, or maybe different investments like stocks, crypto, private equity. And we're in a world right now, excuse the dog barking in the background if you heard him. He's very excited. We're in a world right now where if, you know, you are looking for something truly passive, I do want to express, because so many people come to me and so many people on social media are talking about like passive income, and it's a big buzzword. So I want to touch on it a little bit, that passive income is very exciting, but you need to build to that passive income. And so whether that's like building and growing network, building and growing a business, building and educating and learning about the asset class, finding the right community where they're going to support you through your journey of learning about that asset class. The only true passive income that I believe in is private equity. Or wealth management. That's like where you have somebody completely, truly running all your money and you're just handing it over and you're trusting them. So people that are watching, I'm sure you guys are entrepreneurs and have similar investments like Carla. But if you do want true passive income, you can get there by building your businesses and going to like private equity and private investment.
Exactly. Oh gosh, I'm so happy you mentioned that, because that is such a pet peeve of mine when people are like, passive income, flip a storage unit or something, whatever. It's or like Airbnb passive income. No, I'm in the business of outsourcing, and I always say there is a huge difference between passive income and outsourceable income. Because like when you hire a team, a remote team that grows your business without you, like not just does the tasks and makes your business run. That's really my mission. I want to help people grow their business without the founder having to do the work, and not just having tasks done, but actually helps it grow. And that's outsourceable. And then you may feel it's passive income because you're not doing anything, but there is work that's getting done. You're just not doing it. Same thing as Airbnb. You can definitely outsource property management. You can outsource marketing, you can outsource the cleaning and everything, but it's not completely passive because things have to happen, right? Maybe if you bought gold and held it and waited, you know, maybe you can call that. But like you said, private equity is definitely one of the ways where they can make real passive income. I love that you shared that, because so many mistakes have been made believing that certain things could be passive income. So speaking of mistakes, can you share with us maybe two or three mistakes that you see beginner investors that are entrepreneurs, the mistakes that they make when they start investing?
I would say one of the biggest ones is throwing yourself in without a community or any kind of support. So for me alone, like I've started businesses, I've done a lot of investments, and I made a lot of mistakes and that I had to learn from on my own. And what I've learned is that having a support system, it doesn't have to be a whole team. It could just be a mastermind or a community or a WhatsApp channel, a Slack channel, whatever is going to support you in your process of investing, so that you have some energy and some people to kind of like feed off of. It's really great to have a community where you can kind of banter, ask questions, try and get some education. people can kind of steer you in the appropriate direction to help you unblock any challenges that you're dealing with financially, or help just get you in the appropriate places to get the education that you need that you may be missing. I would say number one, like, network equals net worth. That's like my biggest motto. And so if you can surround yourself with amazing people, you are not going to make mistakes of maybe, you know, spending money on things that you don't need, or putting money in a place where you feel like, a lot of people who start up with businesses or investments think they need like a full team. You don't necessarily need to be paying people and having a full team. Maybe just have people that you can get support you, and just have like the community. So that's number one, is like, you know, going all in on things that you think you need that you don't really need.
Right, right.
And then number two, taking a lot of risk, taking massive risk and going into like an investment or a business that you know nothing about, that maybe you're believing like you're really passionate about. And I honor that you're passionate about something. What I've done personally is just like started asking myself, when I want to grow financially, what are my skills that I have right now that I can leverage versus going all in on something that I know nothing about? And that has been a huge asset to me. So instead, maybe start where you are versus like going all in on something that you don't know anything about and taking risks that you're not really sure what kinds of directions and decision-making process you should take with. So that's number two. And then the third one would be, you know, really educate yourself. Spend the time and then the energy educating yourself on what you are investing in. Because even though I'm a firm believer that you can hack your way to wealth, you can get in the right rooms with the right people that are going to tell you what stocks to buy, or tell you when to sell, or tell you what kind of real estate investments are going to pop off because they are really close to the source. I do believe that that's a great hack, but I also believe that you could always educate yourself more on the things that you are investing in with your time and resources. So just making sure that you are also like taking the time and energy to educate yourself and really understand what it is you're putting your money into and where it's going and where your money's going. Because, you know, I know, Carla, like, you're a world traveler, you live all around the world. And we met in Mexico, and in the area of Mexico that we met in, there's a lot of real estate developments that like start and then they pause because they run out of money and there's not enough investment. And then they're trying to blackmail and grease palms and do all these things. And so that's something that I know, like, when I've been looking at purchasing real estate in the area, I've had to ask a lot of those questions to the people that I see investing in these assets and say, okay, wait, what do you know? What don't you know? Like, and really try and get educated as much as possible on the investment before I make the decision.
Yeah.
So long-winded answers I give you, but I hope that it's pretty thorough in really like get in the right rooms, get community, get educated. And what was the other one I said? It was
don't take super big risks.
Oh yes, thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
Understand just like the risks that you're taking. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that saying, don't put your eggs in one basket. That's really, you have to have at least like a plan B. It's very hard to, as a first-time investor, rely on one vehicle for your like retirement or investment, or that you feel like this is the thing that will bring, you know, your first generation of wealth. If you are like me and you're from a poor family and also from a developing country, I had no right to handle a lot of risk, like, really. And I know that the idea of easy, quick wealth could be super attractive to people like me. And actually, that's why so many people in developing countries get scammed, right? By really bad investments. And it's because they're not educated enough. It's because they didn't ask enough questions from enough people. They didn't read enough. And we can get emotional. We can get and we can get taken by a really savvy salesperson, a really savvy talker. And so I love that all of your advice and all of the mistakes that these people could avoid could be avoided by a little bit of education, a little bit of introspection and risk management. That I think that's really, really important to emphasize. So let's talk about myths and like widely held beliefs. What are some of like widely held beliefs that you want to challenge about first-time investing?
I love this question because I think the biggest like myth and misbelief is that you don't have a financial education. So who are you to be going and investing or taking chances? And the thing is, I didn't have a traditional financial education. I had no financial education. And I came from wealth. We lost it all. Then I had to build it all back by myself. So it was a great learning experience. But at the same time, I was always in the belief that I had to like save money, save money. And so as a kid, I would even like roll quarters and coins and bring them to the bank and put them in a bank account and save. And I was of the belief that like, okay, over time, I can just save my way to wealth. I can just make it happen. One day I'll wake up and like there'll be just a magical amount of millions of dollars in my bank account from working and saving. But because I didn't believe that I had a financial education, I didn't feel empowered. And so I didn't take chances and I didn't try and learn. It stopped me from even putting myself in the right rooms. And when I did that, I kept perpetuating that other belief of, oh, I can save my way to making all this money, instead of saying, wait, what if I put myself in the rooms? What if I take some chances? What if I learn? Versus, you know, just sitting there and feeling disempowered financially, because that I think is the biggest thing. Like, I'm a firm believer that we can make money in so many ways, but also a lot of the people that are incredibly successful were persistent. They got lucky. They put themselves in the right rooms. They met people. They went out and just like took chances and
made things happen. Yeah.
If we continue to do those things, I think you're going to get lucky just like everybody else. You're going to make plenty of money. You're going to be successful. You're going to get your desired end results.
Yeah.
So when it comes down to it, it's really feeling empowered and feeling like you can basically show up and take the chances that you want to take to create the life that you want.
Yeah, I love that. That's such an empowering statement. And I want to add actually a personal experience with that. I once dated a person from a really wealthy family, like really like private jet wealthy family. And I noticed that when I hung out with their friends and their family, there is, how do I say this? There is an impression and an air of, we are wealthy people and let's not talk about how other people can get here. Let's just keep the secrets here in the family. And I noticed that some of these people, I'm not antagonizing wealthy people, absolutely not. But I'm just saying that a lot of wealthy people, when they try to give you advice, do not just take it because they're wealthy. Diversify who you learn from. Some people, not just wealthy people, some people do not have the best intentions when they try to give you advice or tell you something about how to invest the right way. And that experience made me realize that I need to educate myself. These people are never going to tell me the secrets, and they will also never see me as part of their circle. That feeling really sat with me for a very long time. Not in such a way that, oh my God, now I have a chip on my shoulder, whatever. I know that I was smarter and more hardworking than most people in that table, but they did have the massive privilege of growing up wealthy. And you know, what was the saying? It's turning $100 into $1,000 is work, but turning, you know, a million dollars to to a million, 1.1 million is just inevitable, right? And so people definitely with wealth have an advantage, but it doesn't mean that they have the best intentions when they try to give you advice. And number two, it doesn't mean that it isn't a world that you can't penetrate just because you come from a different like class. So I love that you shared that.
And I do believe like part of that is like the old money mentality, Carla, that mm-hmm. old money mentality is like, okay, let's keep it tight. Let's keep it close. Whereas like when I've experienced both. So, you know, growing up in a traditional, very, I would say traditional country and a traditional, province in Canada, where like a lot of the money there was like old money. Mm. The families that had money there had built it for generations. Mm-hmm. And so I was very, you know, present with that as a young child and growing up in my formative years. But then as an adult, got to experience working in technology in San Francisco, where like there's a lot of new money and everybody's making money in venture capital and people share information and they're like, we're in the same room. We both want to be successful. Let's make it happen for each other and let's help each other. And so, yeah, it's really building like your network appropriately, and you can get into these rooms and you can be with all these people, old money, new money, you know, financial educators, wealth advisors, all these people that are a wealth of knowledge, entrepreneurs and people that support you through your process. But it's really just finding the sweet spot that works for you, you know, and kudos to you for doing all these amazing things and becoming so successful.
I mean, I also felt a lot of my back was against the wall feeling many, many times in my life, not just once. And so I think it was like a general attitude of, I just have to make it happen. A huge part of it, I really owe to my parents for sure, with how they trained me on how to go after what you want and how much they believed in me and how much I also honor, like as part of our culture, I'm Asian, I'm Filipino, we're Catholics. We have a lot of like honor and respect to our parents. And there is a lot of contentment and fulfillment, a feeling of fulfillment that we get whenever we basically make our parents happy, or when we turn out to be the people that our parents want us to be. And because my parents were amazing parents, they definitely, unfortunately, did not have the wealth that they wanted. They were very hardworking people, but it was such a different time. I made most of my wealth through the internet. And so I've been given different opportunities. So I would say it was definitely a privilege having that attitude and that background. Speaking of a childhood, a background, you know, how you were raised and experiences, memories that build your perceptions about investing. What is a myth that you used to really believe in and when you were a kid, and now you completely squashed like that belief?
I honestly thought that like money would just show up for me, like that I would just like one day. Yeah, I know this sounds ridiculous, but it's true. Like when I was younger, I thought one day like I would just wake up and money would be in my bank account and it would just show up for me. And I realized that I had to step up and I had to take responsibility and I had to just take the action steps towards making it happen. And the biggest thing that moved the needle for me with that was, what was my burning desire? What was my burning question of why? Mm-hmm. Why did I really want this money? What mm-hmm. was I going to do with this money? Why was this money so meaningful to me and the wealth and success so meaningful? And in the end, when at the time for me, when it happened, it was because supporting family, getting out of debt, that was such a burning desire for me that it motivated me through the experience. And so for me, it was find that why. And it's like in anything that we do, you know, like if you love a person, like, why are you marrying them? Like, why? Ask yourself, why am I starting this business? Why am I investing in this investment? Why do I want this wealth? Why am I moving to this country? And those burning answers are what's going to really keep you on that path of obtaining that desire.
Yeah, I love that, because sometimes we just go towards a goal without asking why. And we realize that the reason we're going after that goal is actually not serving our initial kind of intention or our finish line, where we want our finish line to be. I grew up from the Philippines, a developing country. I thought America was my finish line. If I could just get there, you know, things will happen. It's like O's. Take me to O's, you know, and this is like a wonderland. But when I got to America, I started to see the cracks and how it wasn't really everything that I wanted it to be or that I imagined it to be. And so I kept traveling. I kept going until I found Mexico, Playa del Carmen, where we met, where a lot of the things that I valued were there. And it showed, growth showed up in so many parts of my life. I love that. I love that question. Why is this money so meaningful to me? What does this mean? I love that. I think you should start like a journal business at least. I love all of these journals. I'm literally writing them down and I have a money journal and I'm going to journal about this later. I love these questions. What was something that surprised you when you were asking yourself this question?
I think when I asked myself why I really wanted the money, I mean, I was never like a person that really cared so much about luxurious items or brands or anything like that. But for me, I definitely had the belief that I had to have a specific amount of money in order to have what I would think was like financial freedom or an easy lifestyle. And so, crazy enough, like, I'll give you the number that I had in my head just so you, Carla, can give your reaction. But like in my head, I was like, I need $20 million to be financially free and to have this like easy life. And then when I started really asking, like, why do I want this? Why do I want this? It started to peel away the layers. And I was like, wait, I don't really need $20 million to be financially free. And I don't need $20 million to have an easy life. I can have $20 million. I can manage $20 million in investments, but that's going to be work. So do I really want that? Or do I want the peace and the ease and the freedom? And if I do, what is that number? Like, what does that cost? And what does that look like?
Right.
And so that was really fascinating to ask myself when I started to say like, why? Because the why had nothing to do with like the luxury or the beliefs of the things that I really wanted around me or the lifestyle that I was creating. It was the feelings that I wanted within, the peace, the freedom. That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating to see.
Yeah, I had a similar experience actually. The first business that hit of mine that hit seven figures, I started to reinvest in my company. So one of the things that I reinvested in was I signed up for like different masterminds. I want to be around people who are more successful than me. And I started finding myself in rooms where people were talking about making $5 million a year, making eight figures. And my head was just like, oh my God, this is insane. And then, and that moment, I had the same experience just like you. I had a number in my head. More embarrassing, but in my head it was like 50 million was like my number. Oh, if I could just have 50 million, you know, if I could just make this money. And then I started to be more intentional, and then like, what are the things that I like doing? How many times will I travel? And I had so many cheap hobbies. I'm like, seriously, like it didn't matter to me if I was wearing Gucci or if I was wearing Zara. Like I realized that that actually didn't matter to me. And I wanted to see my family more. I want to buy great gifts for my nieces, maybe my future children. I want to go on vacation anytime. I don't need to fly private. Actually, small planes scare me a little bit. And so I realized like, oh my God, that was such a stupid like goal. And I feel like I was influenced to have that goal because I was around these people who were always talking about the next figure, scaling my business. That's also one thing I realized. I don't want to always scale my business. I don't want to always be like, oh my God, let's close X sales. What is the growth rate? No, I realize that that doesn't make me happy. That doesn't matter to me anymore. Other things matter to me. I love that my business is growing and it's always grown, but I do not need to run to eight figures just so I can be happy. So that question is really, really powerful, and it brings you back to why are you even doing this, right? Why are you going through this, all this self-work and this business? What is it serving? So yeah, I love that. So for a lot of our listeners who are entrepreneurs, and this includes investing in your company, so feel free to give a little bit of business advice if you want. But for you, in your opinion, what are the top three best investments that entrepreneurs can make?
I love the idea of investing in yourself to create lifestyle balance. So whether you're an entrepreneur or not, I think this transcends to everybody. Investing in little things, like for me, for example, I make my life super easy. I love having things delivered to my house. I don't necessarily want to be going to the grocery store. I don't necessarily be, you know, wanting to run to the pharmacy. So any kind of delivery services are a great thing I invest in. I also invest in having like Uber drivers and private drivers when I travel. I do invest in like private travel. So that's super important to me, because the ease and convenience of having work-life balance really supports my mental, physical, and emotional health as a person.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much stress for entrepreneurs right now. So if you can find little hacks that are going to make your work-life balance easier for you, that's super important. Very high on the priority list also in work-life balance is like investing in your health. And that's something I've spent so much money on this year alone, that I've hired like healthcare professionals and people.
Yeah.
I've done like high-end blood tests to test every cell in my body and figure out where my mineral levels are and what kind of foods I should be eating and how to optimize my health and my diet, biohacking, any kind of health investments. It doesn't have to be as extreme as I go. It could be something as small as, you know, starting to really invest in like whole foods and buying like really high quality food products for yourself versus like fast, convenient meals. If you are taking the convenience of getting it delivered, then it could be good quality. So you're optimizing your time and your health at the same time. Win-win. A great investment also is like by far community. When you are an entrepreneur, when you are an individual or investor, or you're getting started in your financial investments, surround yourself with people that know more than you, that are going to support you along your journey, that are going to elevate you, whether that means like being there for you emotionally or a mastermind that's going to give you the knowledge and the awareness that you really need. That is, I would say, like a top, top investment. Conversely, I do really feel like there's a lot of people that are wanting to be coaches or wanting to be entrepreneurs, and they step into putting so much money into a bunch of different masterminds and a bunch of different people. Really, like, be very specific about how much money you're investing in these communities, what time investment you're wanting to put in these communities, and what you're really looking for. Because I've gone down that rabbit hole of like investing in a bunch of different masterminds and then traveling around the world. And before you know it, like that's what your time is being spent on. So you need to be aware of the communities that you're going to and what you're wanting to get out of them. But that's really important. Also, like, do not be hesitant about startup things. Like, I know a lot of people want to start scrappy businesses right now. And they're like, oh, well, I want to do this, but maybe I don't need Zoom premium or Calendly premium and all these little investments. I would say like, go for it and just start putting yourself into the awareness that like you're growing a business. If you need some kind of like a QuickBooks or something, don't take the free one. If you want to be successful, go all in, buy the subscription, you know, like make the commitment that you're going to get the return on that investment. And don't be afraid to not be too scrappy when it comes to investing in things that are really going to optimize your business and help you gain more clients and gain more exposure. So that could be anything from like QuickBooks or like a Calendly link or Zoom or even like a listing site. Just be really aware that like putting those investments into your business early on are actually going to benefit you in so many ways. So don't be shy to not be scrappy, conversely.
Yeah. And I think that also has a lot to play with your self-perception. Are you a freebie seeker? Are you, you know, are you the kind of person who will look for the cheapest option, even though you know that it's really not the right fit? And I'm a huge believer of energy and the energy of money. And I noticed that the people who are super scrappy and try to save on every single thing, even though it doesn't make sense, they also somehow, oh, this is a hot take, attract clients who are like that. And then they, now they hate what they do. I noticed that some of the most successful people that I work with pay their invoices on time, with happiness, with joy, and they want me to succeed when we start working with them. It's like the energy is just so positive all over. And I can see how that the I need to save money and I need to think like a startup is it is a good mindset, but just like what you shared with what your health is like, if you don't put quality input in, you know, just like how it is with your body, how is the machine gonna operate as it should? So I love that. And I believe in everything that you shared. And I believe that also for me, on top of like everything that you shared, one of the best investments that I've made as an entrepreneur is also really hiring really great people. Like what you mentioned when we were chit-chatting, it's like, how do you even run like a brick and mortar and an online business, like different parts of the world? And I think it is really investing in the right people. So I even have this take that if you're interviewing three people and two people are awesome, they're just so awesome, just hire both of them. Hire both of them and make it work later.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. So that has been a huge game changer for me because it helped me unlock a lot of things in my life that I wanted, because now I have people who have my back. And this is not just your business. This is like your housekeeper, your, you know, your driver, your functional doctor, functional medicine doctor that you work with. So I invest in people. I think it's such a good investment. So
100%.
Yeah.
That's you building your network. And like, I don't know about you, but when I have tried to cut corners and do things free or for a lower cost, in the end, it's actually cost me more.
Yeah, I know. I kicked myself so many times. I made that mistake so many times before. Yeah. Yeah.
So I've learned those experiences. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to go all in. And so, yeah, if that means doing something like what you would do and hire those people, both people that are qualified, do it. Because for me, I've hired people around me, like, you know, ex-IRS agents and tax attorneys and all these people set up trust, do all the things that I've done for my business and myself individually. And it has completely changed the game for me. And I just look at my life now and I'm like, how come I didn't do this, you know, like 5 years ago, 6 years ago? It would have been so much easier.
Exactly. Also, it's like when you hire a consultant or someone to help with your business, or when you hire an employee, think about it just like hiring a doctor. Are you going to hire a doctor because they're the cheapest? Or are you going to hire the doctor who will give you the perfect diagnosis and will fix what needs to be fixed in your body? So yeah, just think about that, guys. If you if you are tempted to save a little bit of cash, and you know what? The cheapest kind of options never give you peace of mind, because you're always on edge if it's going to work or not. Sometimes you're even resigned. You're like, I don't know. I mean, I spent X dollars. It probably won't work out, but let's see. So once again, the energy is already like, maybe it will not work and I'm fine with that. So, okay. So let's talk about tools and resources. I definitely love a few free tools. There's some books that really stood out for me. So for someone starting their journey, or for an entrepreneur who just started making enough money to feel comfortable about investing, what are some of the best tools and resources that you can recommend?
I recommend clients that like to specific educators or communities so that they can learn about different types of investing that are interesting to them. But there are so many different kinds of like apps, AI bots, and things that you can use if you want to learn how to like trade stocks or you want to optimize trading. I would say really when it comes down to like tools and resources, I'm kind of old school and I really love like Google Sheets and I love communities. And so
she's a freak in the sheets, yo.
I love Google Sheets because for me, like I have been able to track my live net worth in the market on Google Sheets. And I don't think anybody else does that. I've never seen anybody else do it. And so before I make a big purchase, I could just, you do it.
I have a Google Sheet called Carla's Life Organization, and those are there. Those things are there.
you're a woman after my own heart. I love this.
Seriously, I thought I was. It's because I'm a technomoron, but okay, this makes me feel better.
I love it because before I want to make a big purchase, I could just look at where everything is and say to myself, okay, do I feel comfortable making this purchase? Or if I want to diversify out of my investments and like, do I feel comfortable right now pulling this out and moving it to here? You know, what does that look like? And so I actually model it and I use the live network sheet and I love it. It's so fun.
It is fun. It is fun. I love that. Yeah, that's super simple. I'm going to share one and we can like, you know, tennis this out. There is an app which was like Money Manager app. It was free and it's such a simple budgeting app that super basic. Like you will put what you spend and the key is you have to be there every day, of course. And you can watch like what you spend on for like a month or 90 days, just kind of see what you're actually spending on. And then you can ask the questions that Melissa suggested. Why? What is important to you? Why? So when I started doing this, I had like a tough financial, I would say time, 90 days, sometime between end of 2022 to beginning of 2023, because I just left like a partnership from a seven-figure business and I left the business to my former business partner. And so I left the business because I just wanted to leave and then I had to start again on my own. And so I had a tough like 90 days. I had a tough few months. And so I was like, you know what? I need to budget for the first time in my life. I needed to budget. And so I downloaded this app and I learned that I am spending so much on eating out and it was so embarrassing and I had no right. I absolutely had no right doing that at that time, you know, thanks to my husband. He supported me at that time, but I also I was facing these money mistakes that I shouldn't be doing. So find that app. I think the logo is like color red or something like that, but it's free. You guys, I really recommend just watching what you actually spend on instead of going through life with like rose-colored lenses. And then ask yourself, why am I doing this? What's important to me? I realize that it is a treat for me if someone serves me and if someone cooks for me and someone serves me. So I don't like meal deliveries. I don't like stuff like that. I want to go out. I want to go out to restaurants and just enjoy my time. And yeah, so any other tools or resources that you want to recommend?
I love that you shared that because like if you that's important to you and you value that, you should spend money on other people cooking for you and treating you. And that's important. So that definitely should be like a big part of your budget.
Yeah.
But for me, same thing. It's like you can just go into your specific banks. You can categorize your expenses. You know, it just depends how you want to track it. There are so many free apps. There's so many paid apps. Personally, I really like old school and I like Google Sheets because I do not want a lot of apps to have a lot of my personal information. So I'd rather keep it in one space. But you can categorize your expenses through sometimes like your online bank and you can see where you're spending. The big question is when you're starting to sit down and you're starting to look at your spending habits or your investments, I would just ask yourself one question, and that is like, where am I leaking money? Carla, at that time, you weren't, in the space where you could be spending all this money on eating out. So you were already self enough aware that you knew that you were spending a significant amount of money on that. But for most people, we don't realize, especially in the United States, especially in Canada, worldwide, subscriptions are a huge,
Yeah, that's
huge
true.
amount of money that we spend every month. Like I
That's
have a
true.
minimum of three subscriptions that I subscribe to every month. And so really just understanding, like, am I spending money on things that I value? Because if you value your time and you're spending your money on Netflix or Hulu and Prime and all these different subscription models where you're watching TV all the time, but you don't want to be watching TV, then that's not a great use of your funds. So understanding, like, am I spending in alignment with what I value? And if you're not, taking something as small as like $30 a month on a subscription that you could be putting towards your business or towards an investment is actually going to get you much further along in the process of your investment journey than spending $30 on subscriptions.
Thank you so much for sharing that because I had that moment a while ago also, and I asked myself, because I'm very introspective now ever since I started meditating like 5 years ago. Like I always now ask why? Why am I doing this? What is, what are you trying to heal? So I just life coach myself basically. But when I realized that I had oversubscribed on books, I have Scribd, I have Audible, I have Kindle, and I still buy physical books. And I like, what am I doing here? Am I building like the fucking public library of Playa del Carmen? Should I just sell subscriptions for people to come to my house and read books? And I also realize, and I even have YouTube Premium so that when I listen to book summaries, there wouldn't be ads. And I realized this is like a few months ago, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm totally overspending on books. I can't even consume that much. And what do I even do with my time after I read these books? And what kind of books am I reading? I read a lot of thrillers, and because I watch a lot of true crime, and so I definitely went on like a rabbit hole of like, why am I like this? And so now I just have the Kindle, and gave me more peace of mind. But also, guys, there are apps and resources that actually track all of your subscriptions. And then you can check them and you can see them. And even if you don't have that, if you have an Apple phone, for example, just go to your subscriptions. Just remind yourself to at least go once a month because sometimes we subscribe to an app that we only actually need for a day, or we sign up for a free trial and we never like a 1 month free trial, and then we never just got to cancel it. And so leaks, yeah, money leaks. I had a money leak experience also a few years ago, and it was alcohol. Yeah. And one time I was like, huh, I don't feel very rich right now. Where did my money go? This was the pandemic, and I want, this is a safe space, so I'm gonna admit it. I think I became an alcoholic during the pandemic, and I was spending a lot of money on alcohol. I would go out almost every night, and I would have like five, at least five gin and tonics, and or I would have, and I would buy like this French gin that was definitely not cheap, and I would drink a lot of wine, and it was very normal for me to spend $300 on alcohol almost every night. And but for me, it was just kind of like my day, just my day, just my way to relax, whatever. And then I realized, oh my God, this is excessive, this is expensive, and I am an alcoholic when I realized that. And so I had to really kind of life coach myself out of it and slowly get out of that rut. But that was a leak that was so weird because it was happening to me every day, but it wasn't registering in my head. As a professional, Melissa, what do you think was happening with me? Can you diagnose me?
I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I'll just say that, let me first share that you're not alone. I mean, like, you're talking about different subscription models to like books and alcohol. My outlet has been like self-growth and personal growth and meditation. And so like, I was at one point subscribed to like three or four different kinds of like meditation apps and like personal growth education websites and things. And I was like, I was just going nuts. Like I would watch meditation videos sometimes like 3-4 hours a day. Yeah. See, you could have that reaction about alcohol, right? But like, I'm talking about spending like, I don't know, maybe like $200 a month on like subscription models, and you're spending $300 a day on alcohol. It's kind of like the same thing. It's just this extremist like desire to almost like unplug and get away from our stress and not deal with all the day-to-day things that we're trying to handle so that we can get some kind of like relief and peace of mind. And so for me, it was going all in on like mental awareness and self-growth and going down like the spiritual journey. But honestly, like when I looked at it and I said to myself, like, this is ridiculous. Like it's a great experience and I love it, but it's an escapism that I'm feeding into financially. And so like that escapism is not supporting me. I need to almost do the antithesis. I need to show up and be present in the things that I don't want to do versus feeding the things that I think are giving me that escapism financially. And it was a really great experience when I was like, no, I'm canceling these subscriptions. I'm not doing this anymore. Cause I'm like, nobody really needs to spend like 5 hours a day meditating.
Unless are you like the, are you a monk now? Like,
exactly. Unless you want to commit to being a monk, you want to go live the lifestyle in the Himalayas or Nepal or something. And if you do, that's amazing. Like I support you along your journey, you know, but for me, it's like, I want to show up and I want to make a difference in this world. And I know that means showing up as my fullest, as my fullest self in the most like full capacity that I can.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I felt like I couldn't do that without the escapism. And so that financial escapism comes up, whether it's like alcohol, meditation, subscription in watching Netflix, buying a bunch of things on Amazon that show up in your email that you think are exciting. And so when you're really sitting down like financially and looking at yourself as a financial person and you look at what you value and you start realizing that your values are different for you, Carla, it could be like, you really value people. You really care about people. And so, you know, like investing in people versus investing in alcohol is going to give you that fulfillment in so many other ways that you won't even need the alcohol anymore. You know, like you'll be on such a high, hopefully, from growing your team, growing, you know, your network, like giving more funds and more money into the pockets of people that are employed by you and support your businesses. And so that's really going to give you that high versus like the financial escapism.
Wow. I've never heard that term before, financial escapism. But other examples that I can think of is these overdone beauty routines, right? Have you noticed like there is a huge social media kind of wave of influencers? Obviously, they're making money off of their affiliate links, but they want you to buy everything. They want you to buy this toner and then this cream and this serum, and they want you to layer like 16 types of products. And I've seen this happen to a lot of my friends, that they have some sort of financial escapism, but also like in beauty or in fashion. I have a friend who had no business buying, going shopping all the time, but it was like her way of like relief as well, because like she shared with me that when she was a kid, her mom made her dress up in like ugly clothes, hand-me-downs. And when she started making money, finally, she just started buying clothes. And now she's like, she can't stop. And so I think the act of spending money obviously produces like a dopamine hit, because it's an acquisition. You're acquiring something. But also, I think the other side of that feeling is, I'm doing something for me And that's why what you shared about like overspending on personal development, that is addicting. I mean, you've seen people in Playa overdoing the ayahuasca thing. Like, you don't need to do ayahuasca every 2 weeks. Like, and yeah, it's
And
insane.
you just have to pull yourself back and realize, like, a lot of these industries too, like luxury industries, beauty industry, like they actually start conditioning us very early. Like, this is
That
how
you
these
need it. Yeah.
industries message,
Yeah.
right? So, like, when you're a young girl in the United States and you go into Sephora, I'm sure this happens in Asia too. You go into like big beauty suppliers, they're basically conditioning you early on as a young girl, as a first-time buyer. They're telling you, remember, you have to budget for these things every month. So when you go in as a first-time young girl and you want to buy like a lip gloss or you want to buy mascara and you get excited about something, they're actually mentally conditioning you to start budgeting for these things to grow versus you looking at yourself and saying, okay, wait, is this what I really want? Because, like, you and I both know there's so many toxins in all the beauty products, and in the quality of the clothing that we buy, there's toxins and things that we're putting on our body, in our body. So, if you value your health, then you're going to think about things a little bit differently. You're going to be maybe a little bit more strategic about what you buy and how much you spend and where you buy from. And so you have to really, in today's world, no matter what you're doing, I think, like, my perspective is come from the inside out, come from like who you are first and what you value, what's important to you, versus looking at everybody else around you and the social media landscape and living your life through that. Because, I believe, like, we create our own matrix. So it's like, what do you want to create? What kind of life do you want to create for yourself?
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. That felt honestly like a therapy session to me because it's not just girls, no, it's like we are always, there's a tendency for us to always overspend on something that we need to actually fix emotionally. And I totally agree with you guys. Kids have no business wearing makeup, nail polish. They are children. They don't need to also wear heels. Like, oh, let me just go on a little rant here. I hate when I see kids getting dressed up in heels. Like, no, they don't. No, they need their feet flat on the ground, guys. They're still learning to walk and run. But this is media. This is an entity that makes and gains a lot from you spending and thinking a certain way so that you can spend a certain way. So this is why so important to educate yourself, talk to the right people.
And I think, like, it's important for your audience to know, because you have a global audience, Carla. Like, there's still a big portrayal of like the American dream. And the American dream is changing and it's shifting, right? You see, like, a lot of Americans expatriating, leaving, going to other countries. So it's really like asking yourself, is that really real? Because throughout my life, I've had the luxury of being in rooms in places where I've seen a lot of people who are living way beyond their means, like living to kind of keep up that lifestyle, whether they're living in the United Arab Emirates and they're living in the Middle East, or they're living in the United States. They just want to portray this lifestyle. So they'll buy all these luxury items and they'll do all these things because it's important for them to look a certain way to their social circle. Is like asking what's really important to you. And if you are somebody who's an entrepreneur and you are very passionate about the business that you have because it drives you, it motivates you, it makes you feel great, or you're somebody that just wants to, like, really grow your wealth and move forward in a different way, create a different life for yourself than you grew up with, somebody, for example, like you, Carla, it's really just tuning into like what is right for you and crafting the reality around that, because the American dream, like I said, is shifting and we're going to see money is changing. It's changing, moving faster than we've ever seen before, in larger quantities, in more hands. And like, this is an exciting time to be at the forefront of investing and finance and money. And so, if you're in this space, I encourage you to, like, just, go into the experiences that really are of importance to you versus like what kind of portrayal you think is important to the outside world.
Yeah, I love that. And you know what, guys? Like, people actually care less than you think. I was, because of my career as actually a blogger in the past, forever ago, we were like the early influencers, right? The bloggers, we blog about things, we get invited to go to restaurants, resorts, things like that. I was also in that trap of like, well, now people are watching me. I have to look nice and rich and pretty and skinny all the time. And I realized that I've done certain things. I went to certain places. I've bought certain items that actually didn't align with me, but it just aligned with what I think my audience will think of me. And so, thankfully, obviously I was young and stupid. I learned from that experience, and now it's me. How do I feel? Is this important to me? And of course my family. So that's really that it was a long journey, but it was definitely worth it. And like what Melissa shared earlier, guys, do not be embarrassed about realizing that you've made some bad decisions in the past, whether it's a money decision or you bought too many beauty products or you overbought some subscriptions. That's okay. It's part of your journey. The good thing is you have access to resources like this podcast. You can follow Melissa's work. We're going to talk about that. And there are a lot of options for you to really get yourself a leg up, even if you did not grow up from a wealthy family or that you don't hang out at a country club. So, thank you so much, Melissa, for your time, your super wonderful advice, and most of all, your transparency, your openness, your honesty. You really made me feel positive about what the future could bring to a lot of entrepreneurs that are just at that precipice of now I made this much money, I don't know what to do with it. I just don't want to make mistakes. So I want people to know what's next for you, what are you building, and how can people follow you so that they can work with you?
Thank you so much. Yes, I currently work with clients one-on-one. I am happy to take free calls with anybody that's interested. Very happy to give advice. If you send me a DM on Instagram with the word freedom, we can decide if you're a good fit for working with me. But if you have a generalized question, please also DM me on Instagram. I'm happy to answer any of the questions that you have. My mission is just to help people really grow and protect their wealth. And so it doesn't matter how that happens. I just want to support people along their journey because the more people that are wealthy, the more that we can change this world.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I love that. So I'm going to link Melissa's Instagram account on my show notes. And so don't worry about having to go on Instagram and look for her on my friends list. You don't have to be a stalker, although I know that you can be. I have no doubts on your skills, on your stalking skills, but I'm gonna link her work, her Instagram, and her some of a body of her work on the show notes so that you guys will easily find it. And you can finally take that step and take on that courage to take your future in your hands and fly some kites, basically, as they say. I love that expression, and make some bold moves to really take your future in your own hands. So thank you so much, Melissa. This has been an awesome conversation. I learned a lot, and I also felt a lot of confirmation and relief. So I really, really appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Carla, and I appreciate your transparency. I hope that we get to work together again more soon.
I'm sure we will. Or if not, then I'll see you at the sauna.
Definitely, it's one of my favorite places.
Perfect. All right. So just two naked ladies finishing our podcast. Thank you guys for listening. If you love this episode, I would really encourage if you could share it with someone that you love. You could be a blessing to someone today. Get some karma points. If you have a friend of yours, an entrepreneur who's thinking about investing and they just want some perspective, some guidance, at least have them listen to this podcast, even when you're driving, at the gym, whatever. This is a conversation that every entrepreneur needs to hear so that they can finally make some good decisions and good strides when they start investing. So, and if you can, guys, if you love this episode, please leave us a review. You can give as much as a 5-star review or at least share it on your socials. You're going to help a lot of people too and get some good karma. Thank you so much. I'll see you next week for another episode of None of Your Business. Bye.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have 2 conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.